Welcome to Red Inca. I'm Jared Kimber. This episode of Red Inca, we talk about the PSL with our resident expert,
Behram Kazi, who is a podcaster at Good Areas and Pro Sports Pakistan and the video content lead at Grassroots Cricket.
We look at the winners, losers, Babar's comeback, best young players, we search for a young spinner, and also the re-emergence of Imad Wasim. First one sounds good. Anyway, reasons behind... let me know why Lahore had a terrible season. Because they were, back-to-back champs?
Yeah, they were the first ever team to become back-to-back champs in the PSL. And they had arguably the greatest ever, you know, bowling attack assembled in franchise T20 cricket. They had peak Shaheen, peak Haris Rauf, Zaman Khan and his slingy bowling at the death. And they had Rashid Khan, who is a bit of a cheat code in T20s. And then the remainder of the four overs were often bowled by David Wiesa and Sikandar Raza Butt. So that's as good as it gets, really. And this season, Rashid Khan wasn't available. Of course, he was, in recovery from surgery. And due to that rehab process, he was not available for this PSL. They knew that, though, and they still retained him. And they did not draft a replacement for Rashid Khan. Now, granted, you can never truly replace Rashid Khan, right? He is in a league of his own. And you can't just bring someone in and say that, oh, this guy will do Rashid's job. But they didn't even come close to that, right? Like, Lahore went with no spinners, and all of the spinners that they had in the squad were basically PDP products, which are, you know, cricketers who evolved from their own academy, which a lot of people have.
I thought you meant Peter Della Penna for a minute, and I was very confused.
They're not associate products.
Is PDP training spinners? Because I wouldn't trust a spinner trained by PDP.
Well, I wouldn't trust a spinner trained by the actual PDP either, right? I mean, it was very, very bad. They had some part-timers in George Linder, who did well on a few occasions. But basically, Lahore, in 9 completed fixtures, because one was rained out, they were only able to win a solitary game, right? Which is quite bad. And I get that you didn't have Rashid, so that automatically makes everything harder. But and also, I'll give them the fact that David Wiesa got injured mid-tournament and was unavailable for a lot of those games. And he's a difficult cricketer to replace because he's a bit of a cult hero in Lahore as well, has been clutch for them. And then Haris Rauf, even though was, you know, in a terrible run of form and had been having some issues with the PCB as well, is still currently having those issues. He dislocated his shoulder in the one game where he actually performed. So they lost Wiesa and Haris Rauf after 4 games, and they'd lost all of those 4 games. But I still feel that Lahore should have been better. And one main reason why I think that they, you know, failed royally is because Shaheen Shah Afridi's captaincy was all over the place. Now, he did bowl some, you know, quick spells in this PSL. I'll give him that. The pace was back up, but he was leaking runs. And that's still a worry because Shaheen is supposed to be, you know, strike bowler supreme. And whenever he does well, Lahore does well, right? In the previous PSL, he was taking more wickets and was leaky. This time, he took, 14 wickets and was still leaky. And he was going at, 8.5 and over by the end of it. They picked too many top-order batters, right? Abdullah Shafiq, Rassie van der Dusen, Sahib Zada Farhan, who is, you know, a domestic champ. And they also had their own PDP opening prodigy, Mirza Tahir Beg, plus Fakhar Zaman. So you have all of these top-order batters. Shea Hope, add Shea Hope to that, right? I just did not understand how they're going to kind of figure that combination out, which they weren't able to do right till the very end, right? And I believe that even though they had so many missing players, you know, it was a shit show when it comes to drafting. It was probably the worst draft they've ever had. Sikandar Raza Butt was underused. This is the guy who had, you know, a splendid ILT20, was the player of the tournament, if I'm not wrong. And Shaheen was batting ahead of him. They barely gave him any deliveries to do his thing, right? And he was under-bowled as well. Rassie van der Dusen was actually the lone warrior for Lahore. And I believe that even though Shaheen did not have those sort of resources that he had in the past, and let's be honest, if you're managing that sort of bowling attack that they had in the previous 2 seasons, I mean, anyone could kind of do
it,
right?
Just turn up, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So when things got tough, he was all over the place. There was this one guy, Essen Bhatti, who was not a good batter, not a good bowler, and he'd be sending him in the top 4. He's bowling the second over in the power play. Stuff like that. Really stupid stuff, right? And Shaheen himself promotes himself up the order. Now, that comes off sometimes, right? But not always. And I don't want to see Shaheen Shafridi batting at 5 on the regular. So I believe that it was poor drafting and poor captaincy. And yeah, if not for Rossi, they might not even have won a single game because he was like that one guy who was scoring runs for them. It was a season to forget for Lahore. And they're one of those teams that they either play the final or don't make it to the playoffs, right? Out of 9 seasons, it's 6 playoff exits, 3 finals, 2 PSL titles. So not particularly surprised, no.
Tell me about Baba Azam. What's the narrative with him?
Yeah, so it was probably the biggest story or one of the biggest stories to come out of this PSL. Of course, no one is, stranger to the Babar Azam strike rate conversation. I believe that it was nuanced to begin with. Obviously, there was a bit of an issue over there, but it wasn't the biggest issue for Pakistan, you know, ever. Maybe the combination of him and Rizwan and them not going at a faster rate is definitely something that needed to be talked about. And they kind of, you know, in the national team broke that pair up. But Babar had a splendid PSL, right? He scored 569 runs in 11 innings, which is the second most by any batter in the competition ever. Only Fakhar Zaman is higher than him, who had what, 588 in 13 innings, something like that. So Babar played less innings as well. And his strike rate was north of 142. Now, that would have been even higher had it not been for those two playoff games in Karachi, where he had to bat in some on some sluggish surfaces. Before that, he was striking at over 150. And that was the main takeaway. Now, he was not dismissed in the power play by a bowler ever. The one time he was dismissed in the power play was by virtue of a run out. And in the power play, we saw Babar attack, right? It was actually after the power play where he'd kind of slowed down in the middle overs. And I asked him this question in a presser that I've noticed this trend in your batting. And he said that it's because wickets are falling at the other end and I'm consolidating at that point. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it. Interestingly enough, you know, he's someone who's known for his catch-up knocks. He had one catch-up knock in this PSL, more or less. And in that knock, he got his first 50 or 40-odd balls and then ended up with 111 of 63. So he actually, you know, made the most of that catch-up knock. And, you know, Babar had a terrible 2023. I would say even across formats. Because in ODI cricket, he didn't turn up versus the big teams. He turned up versus Nepal. In Test cricket, he averaged 22. And in T20 cricket, he absolutely, you know, dropped the ball. He was just not even close to the numbers that he was himself producing a couple of years back. So I would say that Babar Azam basically was demoted in Pakistan's national team to first drop. And in this PSL, he could have let Simon Harris open, right? It kind of makes sense as well. But Babar was like, no, I'm going to open. And I think he was making a statement that I should be opening for Pakistan as well. And if you end the tournament with 569 runs at a strike rate north of 142, which was 150-odd prior to the first or the last two games, I think he's pretty much made his case over here. And I think that him opening the batting for Pakistan alongside Saim Ayub should be a no-brainer at this point. But it was one of those tournaments which made you believe again that Babar is in fact an elite batter who had a shit year. The only sad part is that it's one of his peak years, right, that he wasted. He should have made the most of it and should have been one of his golden years, especially with an ODI World Cup. So that was a big miss for him. But one hopes against hope that he's picked up his form again. And this evolution of him as a T20 batter, and not just with respect to strike rate. I saw him apply some of, some out-of-the-box unorthodoxy, right? Babar was ramping. Babar was ramping over third man as well. It was interesting to see. And he was actually looking to strike in the power play, which he did quite successfully. In the one game he didn't, he got 100 off 63 deliveries, 111. So I think for him, this was a great tournament. Of course, he didn't end up winning it, got knocked out by Islamabad in the second eliminator. But yeah, overall, I'd say one of the better storylines to come out of the PSL, and it's shut up a lot of critics, which is constantly an exhausting conversation in Pakistan. It's Babar FC versus everyone else. He's either the best thing since sliced bread or the worst thing since Imran Farid's catching ability. So yeah, I'm happy that at least we've come back to some normalcy with respect to Babar scoring runs.
I think since the time we did the podcast about Babar FC, they've had nothing to talk about other than how much they hate both of us. So yeah. It's good that they can talk about him making runs again. You just talked about him. So he's played like a bunch of games for Pakistan, but not really made any runs before. And he looked like a bit of a bits and pieces player to me. I don't even think he's bowled for Pakistan before. He did pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, Saim Ayub, first played the PSL for the Quetta Gladiators, and he was terrible, right? Everyone was wondering, why was he their emerging pick? Like, this kid just does not have it. But he worked on his game. He's got first-class runs as well, so I like that. I like it when batters perform in red ball cricket and then come...
44 first-class average. Not many games, but 44 so far.
That's not bad. And, he is a destructive bat. He also has a very wide range. So if you pitch it up to him on the offside, he's going to go up and over extra cover, towering sixes, right? If you go short, wide of off stump, he's going to step out of his crease versus the fast bowler and slap them over point for six. If you give him anything on his legs or hip, you know, full or short, it's going to the fine leg boundary for six or four. It's almost a sure shot thing. He has a no-look shot as well. He has a bit of unorthodoxy about him. And he plays really fast. Like, his 345 runs that he scored in this PSL came at a strike rate of 157.53. So Sahim Ayoob is someone who should be opening for Pakistan here on. And he...
So he doesn't need to go to the army camp. And
no, definitely not. If the chairman saw any of those Sahim Ayoob sixes, he should know that, you know, maybe he can miss the army camp, even if the army camp is supposed to help anyone in that regard. But he has a lot of flamboyance, a lot of poise, reminds people of Syed Anwar, even though he's more aerial than Syed Anwar, I would say. You know,
I think all modern players are more aerial than the old players.
Basically, yeah. But he was a bit of a revelation with the ball. Now, I always saw him as a part-timer of a part-timer, not even just a regular part-timer, right? But this kid was bowling in the power play, so important overs. And not only was he frugal, he went at an economy of 7.5. He also took 8 wickets. He got Alex Hales twice, but I don't know how much that counts for in modern-day T20 cricket. And when you add, you know, his pace variations with the ball, especially the new ball, and the carom ball, that's the big one, right? He gets to kind of turn it both ways in a way. So I feel like he's giving Pakistan's national side a lot of options. Now, I don't foresee them using him in the power play, and he would be a buffer over bowler at best. But for Peshawar, he was an important bowler. And
yeah, but even 1 or 2 overs is, you know, going to be handy for Pakistan, isn't it? If they can occasionally throw him the ball.
If you look at him as a package, you know, destructive opening batter, left-hander, no-look shots, wide range, very, very good on the offside as well. And with the ball, he's got the pace variations and the carom ball and the regular off-spinner and can bowl in the power play. Add phenomenal boundary rider to this list. He's a great overall package, and he did end up as the best all-rounder of the PSL. So I think he has a really bright future ahead of him. I just hope that no Pakistan coaches come and tell Sam that, hey, you know, you should put a price on your wicket and not be so destructive, because that is a very Pakistani thing to do. I just hope they don't do that with him and let him be Sahim Ayoob, because this kid is something special, and he won the CPL as well earlier last year. And he did well in the West Indies, right? So that's good news for Pakistan going into a World Cup, which is going to be played in the USA and the Caribbean. So I think in terms of bright young talents, Sahim Ayoob ruled the roost this PSL. He's definitely a sure shot starter for Pakistan in T20s. If that does not happen, and if we continue to see Babar Rizwan open ahead of Babar and Sahim, I would be flabbergasted.
If you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months, plus gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a blocker protects the stumps with NordVPN today.
I wouldn't be, but I could see why it would annoy you. What about any young spinners coming through? Because that's kind of the thing, right? Like, you know, but there's some batting and there's some seam bowling, but is there any, not so much for the World Cup, but, you know, in someone that you saw that you thought over the next 2 or 3 years could be, you know, quite good.
Can I run you by some emerging players just before that? Before we come to the spinners? Yeah. So the PSL is known for having some, you know, superstar emerging players coming to the fore and kind of debuting for Pakistan there on. We saw Ehsanullah, the tearaway quick last year, who kind of, you know, fucked up his elbow. So he's out of contention right now and didn't play this PSL. Shadab Khan is also a prime example. Back in the day, he just rose onto the scene and, you know, got selected for Pakistan right away, won a Champions Trophy. So it's one of those tournaments where you have to play at least one emerging player and have to select like 2 or 3 in your squad. And every season we see some kid, you know, come through the ranks and kind of stake their claim. This year wasn't very much like those staple PSL seasons of the past. I mean, there was Hunain Shah, who is Naseem's younger brother or middle child, because he's got another younger brother in Ubaid Shah, who just played the Under-19 World Cup. All three of those seamers or brothers, the Shah brothers, were in Islamabad United. Hunain hit the winning runs of the PSL, but as a bowler, he has to develop a whole lot more right now. That Pakistan cap is a far way away. I liked him with both the new ball and in the depth, but, you know, there are better options right now. And there were times where he, you know, copped plenty of runs as well. You saw those 16, 17 run overs. And he's a terrible fielder, mind you. He dropped so many catches this PSL. I don't actually think that he caught many. He probably must have caught like one or two and dropped 15. I am exaggerating, but that's what it felt like. Even in the final, he dropped a catch, right? So he's in the conversation, but not quite there yet. Irfan Khan Niazi, he played for the Karachi Kings and has been playing for them for two seasons now, is still an emerging pick or was still an emerging pick this season. Phil Simmons, I interviewed him and he was coaching Karachi Kings. He was their head coach. He was mad impressed by Irfan Khan Niazi. And the reasons are that this guy is a killer boundary rider. And when I say killer, I say Kyron Pollard light, because he is taking those parried catches. He's stopping sixes, being athletic and all. And he's just not dropping any, right? He did drop one or two towards the end. But up until that game, he was absolutely phenomenal in the field, whether it be catching or ground fielding. He also got a few runouts. So electric in the field and also someone who can hit a long ball. And this is also someone who performed really, really, really well in the first class season this year. Got a double hundred. So he did bag the award for emerging player of the season. And I do feel that he has a proper, you know, career ahead of him. If I were to go left field as a Pakistan selector, I'd say just pick him for the fielding. Have him in as a sub-fielder and maybe the boundary riding isn't an issue anymore. But he wouldn't have been my pick for emerging player of the season. I would have given that to Jahandad Khan. This is a young pace bowling all-rounder who played for Lahore Qalandars. Very simple dude. I was in the presser with him and he just didn't know what to say, right? He was overawed by the occasion. And someone who just literally turns up to play cricket and probably doesn't have a personality outside of that. He had long levers and wristy long levers. So
wristy
some of the sixes,
long levers, you should get that on a t-shirt.
Think Shivam Dubey, Hardik Pandya, sort of sixes, yeah? That's the sort of hitting that he displayed. And I think he deserved more of an opportunity. Like some of those games where Shaheen promoted himself up the order, maybe Jahandad should be promoted up the order just to see what he can do. And he looked pretty good against spin, hitting against spin. I really liked what I saw in this kid because batting aside, he took one of the catches of the PSL, a one-handed screamer running back on the side. Like he picked it up like this, right? Running back. It was crazy. And on top of that, as a bowler, he offered a lot of variations and he's still young. So he could develop and maybe add a few clicks to his bowling and that could make him into a prime commodity. He could maybe be the sort of player that Fahim Ashraf could never develop into, and no disrespect to Fahim. But he is a bits and pieces player, right? Jahandad could excel at least one of those two skills. And right now, it's really, you know, up to him what he wants to develop as, because I was impressed with his fielding, his batting and his bowling. And his slow ones definitely did cause some people trouble, right? So I would say that he was the most promising emerging player from this PSL, even though the award went to Irfan Khan Niazi. But overall, if you compare it to all nine seasons, in terms of emerging talent, this one wasn't as fun. Let's just say that.
Did you give me any spinners? I don't think you gave me any spinners.
No. There was this one kid, Mehran Mumtaz. He didn't qualify as emerging, I believe, because he was capped in the Asian Games, which kind of screwed over some of these players, right? They were capped for Pakistan because of the Asian Games. And Pakistan's first string team didn't play those games. So they weren't emerging players in this PSL. And then obviously, it was hard to fit him in the 11. So maybe that's one of the big reasons why we didn't see a lot of these players perform. Because Arafat Minhas, the under-19 World Cup star, who was also really good in the PJL a couple of years back, he only got two games and bowled in one. And in the one game he bowled, he returned figures of 1 for 11 and was beating Babar's bat. So that's a big miss that he didn't get more games. And Karachi Kings really should have gone for him over Mohammad Nawaz. Like, why go for someone who's tried and tested and is woefully out of form? Ahead of someone who performed at the Under-19 World Cup, has been doing really well in junior cricket and is a bit of a prodigy, right? With both bat and ball. And he was getting that ball to break as well. Good wicket-to-wicket stuff. So I think Arafat was robbed of game time and Mehran Mumtaz also came into the fray later into the tournament. But in his first two games, Mehran was what? He had figures of 2 for 42 or 3 for 42 in 8 overs. left-arm off-spinner who bowls quick, right? That's basically his brand of bowling. And I'm told that he's no mug with the bat either, but I haven't seen any of that yet, right? He was good, and he was bowling in the power play and in the middle overs for Peshawar. And as soon as he played his first game, he was a starter. So I would say that that kid could go places. But if you're talking about, you know, potential alone, Arafat Minhas is your guy because he can also bat a bit. And yeah, he's very young.
Yeah, so my worry is with someone who can bat a bit is that we'll end up with another Iftikhar, Imad Wazim, Shadab. They're fine. Yeah. You know what I mean? But like at a certain point, can we pick a spinner who's really good at bowling spin?
I almost
want him to be worse with the bat, is what I'm saying.
Spinners did well, right? I'm not going to say they didn't do well at all in this PSL. Like, weirdly enough, you'd be surprised to know the stat. For a minimum of 10 overs, the most economical bowler, forget spinner, the most economical bowler in this PSL was Shoaib Malik. His economy was 6.39 and Karachi Kings were using him in the power play regularly. That was something
Shan Masood did. Got to impress that new bride, man.
You got to. And no balls that I can recall from Malik in this PSL. that's a surprising stat. Apart from Mehran Mumtaz and Arafat, I think Zahid Mahmood for Karachi, I thought he was washed. I thought he was yesterday's spinner. And, you know, he's done really poorly for Pakistan. But for Karachi, he did really, really well. Got wickets, was frugal. Probably can't play for Pakistan, though. No chance. And then Usman Tariq, did you see this kid? Or not kid, did you see this dude? Looks exactly like Bazid Khan. Stops in his action. And I don't say like...
Oh, yes, I did. Yeah, I see him. Yeah,
he completely stops. Got flagged mid-tournament as well. Action got called out for a bit of a jerk. But then he returned after some tests. So I'm not sure. Maybe, you know, the ICC will intervene at some point. It's not the stop, though, that caused the issue. It's probably the degrees.
Wow. Do you know what? I would guess that the stop is playing a part because... Hmm. When you're doing that, you then have to force the ball down. And if you're a finger spinner and you force the ball down, quite often your arm has to straighten. There is a reason why finger spinners need at least a couple of steps of through that. So it might have played a part, especially if it's just a few deliveries. It's less likely that he is a thrower, more likely that he just has a few deliveries that don't work because he's trying to force the ball.
Yeah, he has variations. Don't get me wrong. Like he can bowl a multitude of different sorts of deliveries, but I don't see that action be repeatable in the long run. I feel like he's going to wear out quickly. And I mean, it's one of those wild card things. He didn't do too well after coming back from that short ban or suspension. But I would say that the two best spinners in the tournament were Usama Mir, as you know, 24 wickets. But economy was 8.13. And either he was really good in some games, like 2 for 16 or 6 for 40 sort of stuff. Mm. Or he'd be going for 68 in 4 overs. And I'm sure you caught the final where he gave away or was hammered for 3 sixes by Marty Guptill, you know, yesterday's opener in his first over of the day. And that kind of like changed the momentum for Islamabad. And he ended up with figures of 1 for 36 in 3 overs in the final. That's my worry with Usama Mir. He does well in these long patches in the middle, convinces everybody that he is international material. And then when the going gets tough, he kind of just completely loses the game for his for his team. And the opposition pounce on him big time. We saw it in the World Cup. He was taken apart. He had a very torrid run. And I get that he's like a tall spinner and he gets bounced and all of that stuff. And he was, you know, I spoke to him about this and he said he looked at his old videos and now that's the reason why he's gone back to some stuff and is bowling better. Alex Hartley worked with him. She was a huge fan. But I'm worried with Usama Mir because you've already got Shadab Khan in the T20 team. And Shadab, just because he bats well in the middle overs, is going to play. So do you want to have two of those same guys who bowl in the middle overs? It's not like Usama bowls in the power play, which is why I would be hesitant to select him for Pakistan.
I think it's fine if he bowls in the middle overs if he was better.
Yeah, let's just
do you know what I mean?
Way.
Like if you trusted him 100%, that's an issue at all. But clearly... I'd be shocked if Pakistan do.
I would be surprised if they don't select him for the New Zealand T20s because he got 24 wickets in, 12 games, right? 2 wickets per game. And the most wickets for any bowler in a PSL season is by Hasan Ali, who got 25. He's the next best and he's the only other spinner to get 20 plus wickets in a PSL season who is not Rashid Khan. So there's a lot of things that are going for him But with Usama Meer, I'm just never, ever completely sold. And I feel like he's going to botch it, you know, on the big stage. And if you're watching this, Usama, I'm sorry. But that's just how I honestly feel about you.
It's just not. He's just not a consistent lander of the ball. And so, you know, he reminds me of sort of early Ishodi, where Ishodi gets a lot of wickets. But at a certain point, you can't actually rely on him. I know Ishodi's tightened up a little bit since then. But
The quality of the wickets as well, Jared. Like, if you're getting a lot of tail-enders, then do they really matter? Whereas on the flip side, you've got someone in Abrar Ahmed, who actually is the only spinner this season who got... what was it, 15 plus wickets at an economy of under 8. So his economy was 7.82. His 16 wickets were quality wickets because he was often bowling in the power play and in the middle overs as well. So he was diverse with respect to the phase of the game. And he's a mystery spinner, right? So hypothetically, if you take him to the USA and West Indies, he could not be picked up or read by some opposition batters. And at least that gives you an element of wicket taking. Whereas I feel like Usama Meer is someone who they can easily study. Not to say that Abrar won't be found out. He very well could be. Like Mendes was found out, right? And Abrar is someone who tweaks it with his fingers. He's a leg spinner, but not a wrist spinner as such. But he's got some variations. He's good with the new ball, and not everyone can pick him. So if I were to say that Pakistan were to select one spinner out of all of the ones that we saw in this PSL,
it would be Imad Wasim.
Yeah, Abrar Ahmed. But Imad obviously offers more, right? Abrar is just a bowler. He can't bat, or he can whack it a bit, but he can't bat.
So what? Tell me about Imad Wasim, because he was kind of finished, right? Yeah. And obviously played a big part in Islamabad's win as well. So what happened there?
There's more context to this story. Imad Wasim kind of became a villain in Pakistan because he said stuff against Babar on TV. And if I'm being honest, it at times did feel a bit spiteful, right? And they did this whole making up sort of PR stunt, or maybe it was genuine, what do I know, when Imad got selected for the Afghanistan series and Babar was captain, or not captain, but he was around. He wasn't playing that series, but they went to dinner, they posted pictures, and they were both teammates at the Karachi Kings, right? And then things fell apart. So Imad was a hated figure in Pakistan cricket. It's important to put that into context because I was at games where Babar is not playing the game. Imad is, you know, feeling in the boundary or somewhere on the rope, and people are chanting Babar, Babar. And this was a constant feature in the PSL. That's how toxic it got. And he was garbage for the vast majority of the PSL, let's be honest. He ended up with 12 wickets in 12 games at an economy of 6.6, which looks great, especially for a defensive sort of spinner like Imad Wasim, who bowls in the power play and offers a lot with the bat, which is his unique selling point, the all-round ability, not just the bowling alone, right?
Can field as well.
We all thought he was done. So he turned it around big time. In the last group game that Islamabad were playing, they were playing Multan, the best side in the tournament. They were chasing 230-odd. Imad scored 30, an unbeaten 30 off 13 deliveries. And the equation was 7 required off 2. I was at that game. It was a full house. And Islamabad were the whole team, home team. Imad hit a 6 and a 4, and the crowd went wild, right? And that's when the redemption arc, you know, gained some steam, because thereon, in all three of the playoff games that Imad Wasim played, he was player of the match. And based on that, I thought that he should be player of the tournament as well, because he turned up when it mattered. He was clutch. And when I say clutch, I mean not just frugal with the ball, but incisive, because all of those wickets came at the end. He took 5 for 23 in the final, becoming the only bowler in PSL history to get a fifer in a PSL final, right? And he was bowling slower, loopier, because the pitches, surfaces were a bit slow. And with the bat, he was playing some mature knocks. He was playing this MS Dhoni-esque sort of knocks of taking the game deep and calculated and controlled aggression. And, you know, he has this arc where anything outside off stump from point to, let's say, extra cover, he has this shot nailed, right? He always gets 4 over there. So he was playing that a lot, and he was also hitting down the ground well. And just, I want to, you know, appreciate his mental strength, because the crowd was against him. He wasn't getting selected. Everyone thought he was yesterday's all-rounder. And he turned up and won Islamabad the title. Of course, he wasn't alone in that effort, but he was the main man in those last 4 games, I would say. And then he also lit up a doobie in the dressing room. After getting that fifer, he went full Shane Warne, going into the dressing room and lining one up. And he was smoking it in a way that you don't smoke cigarettes. So you guys can...
It was definitely, it definitely looked like puff, puff, pass rather than a cigarette. But
it was hilarious.
So Islam Abad win, but you said before that Multan was the best side. And certainly I think I would generally agree with that of what I saw of the tournament. What made them good other than their bowling coach, Kath Dalton, a friend of the show?
Can I talk about Islamabad first, though?
You just talked about Islamabad.
No, because there's more to it, right? They have all of these all-rounders that continually, you know, bailed them out. Fahim Ashraf bailed them out in one game. Azam Khan was good in patches. Shadab Khan ended up with 300-plus runs at a really good strike rate and took 14 wickets with an economy of 8.5. So, yes, he's not bowling like peak Shadab when he first came, but it was better, you know, returns than he's ever had in
How were his hips?
It seemed like he was doing all right, but with the bat, I say that he's evolved into a batting all-rounder at this point because he was batting at 4. And if you have both Shadab and Imad, of course, they'll have to convince Imad to come out of retirement, which I do see happening now. That would give Pakistan a good mix of all-rounders, even if those aren't the most incisive spinners in the world. It's good options to have, and I can see them fitting into the 11. But Islamabad was the proper team. You didn't have a top wicket taker. You didn't have a top run scorer. But you ultimately have a trophy. And Colin Munro turned up in patches as well. Alex Hayes was terrible, but Guptill came in later on and hit runs like peak Martin Guptill. 50, quick fire, 34, then 50 again in the final. So they've won 3 titles now, right? And all the finals that they've played in, the 3 finals, they've won. There are only 4 other franchise teams in history to do that. And I would say that Islamabad peaked at the right time. And also, Multan is a team that have played 4 finals in a row and have lost 3 in a row, whereas Islamabad have now won 3 out of 3. And they've been one of the best teams in the PSL and now can definitely boast that tag of being the most decorated franchise in PSL history for the time being. So kudos to them.
Yeah. So Multan?
Yeah. Multan is an interesting one, right? A lot of people were criticizing them when they hired a host of women in their management and coaching staff. I don't think Alex Hartley has coached ever before, but she was a hit over here. She was even fasting with the team. I was surprised we haven't had that news of her converting to Islam yet, because that's their favorite thing to do, right? We saw it with Michael Jackson, Will Smith, all of those people. Matthew Hayden. We didn't see it with Alex Hartley, though, and good on her for being a sport like that, just to kind of relate to the players and know what they're going through. I think she was a very solid influence on not just Usama Mir, but also Faisal Akram, who was the other young spinner in Multan's ranks, who I think should have played more. Because he's a left-arm wrist spinner who was getting a lot of break in the games that he played. So I was a touch surprised not to see him feature more. So I think Alex did a good job over there. And Kath Dalton is someone who has been making frequent trips to Pakistan and has worked very closely with Ali Tareen, the owner, and his academy in Lodra. And, you know, she basically produced the likes of Muhammad Ali in this tournament. She can take credit for that. And Muhammad Ali is someone... I don't know if you remember this or not, but he played versus England in that, damned test series in Pakistan and went for plenty on that road in Rawalpindi. He turned up big time this time. Got 19 wickets in 12 games. Economy was 8.23, but I'll tell you what. Muhammad Ali was 2 different bowlers in this PSL. The Muhammad Ali that played in Multan was unplayable, right? And the Muhammad Ali that played outside of Multan was just your normal average Joe. So if you divide his numbers, I'm sure that the bulk of those wickets have come in Multan, like 13, 14, something like that. And the rest have come outside of Multan. And the economies were super in Multan as well. Like, he was bowling well with the new ball. He was bowling well with the old ball. He was getting lots of carry. And he had a solid Yorker. And he was someone who could seam the ball, which is important alongside swinging it. So he had, or seemed to have, a complete arsenal in Multan. Kind of dropped off big time thereon. But, you know, it's a good option to have for Pakistan because he seems to be a proper athlete, is a literature nerd. So he likes to read books, which is not something that you get
what
very
What kind of
frequently.
Books? I always hear this with cricketers and it ends up being a Tony Robbins book.
I think The Great Gatsby is his favorite one, but don't quote me on that.
It's a bit basic, but okay. Yeah. We can pass him on that.
Yeah. But I mean, he was leaking runs outside of Multan. He got whacked in Pindi, but we knew he would, or that would happen to him, right? He wasn't the best pacer of the tournament. Naseem Shah was, because Naseem took a wicket every game that he played prior to the final. His economy was 7.5, so he was the only pacer this season who took 15 or more wickets at an economy of under 8. And it looked like we have Naseem Shah of old, even though I would give it some more time. But that was a big positive as well for Islamabad. Coming back to Multan, right? the pace attack with Muhammad Ali, who did well in Multan, and David Willey, who did well everywhere. David Willey in the power play was one of Multan's big strengths. He was unplayable in the power play at times, getting the ball to shape away from the right-hander. And he's someone who is very experienced, is known to be a really good power play bowler. And he turned up. He was their platinum pick. He was their vice captain. And I believe that he lived up to that billing. So Willey and Ali in the power play, that rhymes. I never thought of that prior. And then Usama Mir in the middle overs with his spin. Chris Jordan in the first qualifier was unplayable. Removed Babar Azam with a killer Yorker. Chris Jordan was also hitting 140 odd or 145, which I was quite surprised with. He's known to be, or has known to be, you know, someone who bowls a killer slower one, but that's not what he was doing this PSL. It was pinpoint Yorkers and some good hitting as well. So their bowling attack was actually very formidable. You had Willey, Ali, Usama Mir, Chris Jordan, and then they'd kind of sneak some overs from Abbas Afridi when he was available, Khushdil Shah. And it looked really, really good. They were the best team on paper, the best team, performing team this PSL, because Rizwan, even though he did not score at a high strike rate, he did get 400 plus runs and he was captaining really well. So tactically, I believe Mohammad Rizwan was on point and probably the best captain this PSL. Reza Hendricks was doing really well for them until he had to go. And then he was replaced by Johnson Charles, who also did really well. But the star of the show for Multan with the bat was Usman Khan, who now plays for the UAE and played as an overseas player for Multan this season, even though he was a local player last season. This guy, in 16-odd innings in the PSL throughout his PSL career, has 300s and 350s. And he's the only player alongside Kamran Akmal to have scored three PSL 100s in the history of the competition. And he's the only player to score both back-to-back 100s in the PSL and 200s in the same edition of the competition. So this guy was deservedly batter of the tournament, scored 57 or 40 in the final as well. Very interesting bat. Not a sight for sore eyes. He is a bit agricultural. He can lap it over or play it well over fine leg for four and can mow it in between that pocket of mid-wicket and mid-on. So that's one area. And then on the offside, he is spotless, you could say. He was cutting every ball that, you know, whenever he was offered width, he would either cut it, or if it was fuller, he would like completely like smash it brutally over extra cover. It was quite a sight to behold, that particular shot. But he was susceptible versus short pitch bowling, and he did kind of get found out in the final, even though he survived and he did end up scoring a 50. But I feel like that short ball should have been tried more versus him. But overall, you know, the batting was clicking, the bowling was clicking, and then you had Iftimania as a cheat code. Absolute cheat code. You know, he was striking at 193 in the PSL, scored 259 runs, I believe. And every game it was like Ifti came in, smashed 30 off 8 or 25 off 8. There was this one game in which Multan had to chase like 80 to 90 runs in the last five overs. They lost by 5 runs because Ifti just went mad. And you were speaking about, you know, the chairman saying Pakistani players don't hit big enough sixes. Ifti Mania hits some of the biggest sixes in world cricket, right? He has a very strong base. He has a pointed front toe, you know, which sets him up nicely. And his arc is just crazy. It doesn't matter if it's short pitched or fuller pitched. If it's facing paces at the death, he'll smash it out of the park. And he was consistently doing that. And I think he's a shoo-in in Pakistan's team as well, because he's probably the best power hitter in the country right now. But they would delay his entry points so that he could play pace. And that's what they did in the final. And I think it cost them a bit, because
he's actually done better against spin over the last couple of years. He used to be one of the slowest scorers against spin in the world. And he has done better. So I don't think you need to always delay him as much. But traditionally, I mean, that's probably the case. Speed round, just quick one. Flop to the tournament. Who didn't do very well?
Let me give you an 11. You want me to give you an 11? I have an 11.
Yeah, go.
Alex Hales is my opener because he dropped plenty of catches and did not get a single score. And they played him right up until the final.
This is not speed round. I don't need the full details. Alex Hales is... Everyone understands Alex Hales.
Yeah. All right. Alex Hales, Fakhar Zaman, Shaan Masood, Riley Rousseau, who was a bona fide PSL legend and failed big time this time.
And is going to... He'll probably be playing in the IPL as well. So that's interesting one.
Very interesting one. So that's the top four. Hales, Fakhar, Shaan, Riley. Then you've got Sarfaraz with the gloves behind the stumps. Khushdil Shah at 6. Mohammad Nawaz, who's just completely lost it. Yeah. I'd have him at 7. Daniel Sams at number 8. And he was the Andrew Tai of this season for Karachi. Platinum pick. I don't understand why Karachi went for Tai and Sams, because even Australia lost faith in those guys.
Yeah, Sam's is a weird one. I've never quite understood it. But yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Who else we got? So
Sam's at 8. Mohammed Hasnain, who was recovering from injury, just came back, went for plenty. He's at 9. Salman Irshad, Peshawar's slinger, who gets a lot of gigs in the circuit, T10 and all of that. He has to be my number 10. And Tabrez Shamsi had an absolute howler. Granted, he had diarrhea in some of those games, but you expected Shamsi to do better because he was good for Karachi last season. So he makes up the final person in my flop 11. And not to mention, the fielding standards were extremely piss poor in this PSL.
I was going to ask you, what was worse in this tournament, fielding standards or crowds?
Yeah, well, the crowds were just abysmal in Karachi, right? So yeah. If you take the crowds in Lahore, Islamabad, or Rawalpindi, sorry, and Multan, you got full houses. And Rawalpindi is known to produce full houses, even if it's a dead rubber in Test cricket, like a day with no consequence, they'll still turn up. So it was electric in Rawalpindi. Gaddafi was really good. Partizan, which is also good, they just support Lahore like anything. And Multan is a smaller center, so the crowds always kind of turn up over there, and they really like to support their home team. Karachi was terrible, and there could be a multitude of reasons for this, because the stadium is located next to two universities, I believe, two hospitals, one naval base, and a very crowded neighborhood in Karachi. So it could be a combination.
Partridge in a pear tree.
Yeah, it could be a combination of the location and, you know, just the fact that that area always has traffic. Imagine having a PSL game over there. It could be a combination of that, poor, you know, preparations and facilities for fans. And the fan experience is terrible.
You're saying the stands aren't very good, are they?
Stands are bad, and you have like these giant barbed wire fences which disrupt the view. And you also, you know, the seating isn't great. You've got pillars in between. So I think the reason that Karachi didn't turn up for these games and doesn't turn up historically as well, ever since cricket has come back to Pakistan, Karachi doesn't turn up. The combination of these two things could be the reason. I'm not ready to buy the notion that people in Karachi have lost their appetite for cricket. But they did turn up in the final two games. And in the final, it was a full house. So at least they saved the PSL from those blemishes and turned up on a Monday night. So it maybe makes up for the lack of crowds in the games prior in Karachi. But yeah, I'd say the fielding standards were definitely more.
And just lastly, where do you think the PSL is at the moment as a franchise league?
That's a fantastic question. And had you asked me, you don't have to give it away. I think it's an important question.
I just want to slag off the fielding in Karachi.
Anyway, if you'd asked me this question a couple of years back, I would have said that after the IPL, the PSL is the biggest league in the world because it's Pakistan's league. Everyone adores it in this country. And it had gathered a huge fan following outside of Pakistan as well. And, you know, in the first few seasons, it attracted top talent. Now, while this season of the PSL was very competitive, you had lots of final ball thrillers. It made for great viewing.
Are you saying George Linder is not top talent?
Well, I mean, that's the jury's still out on that one, right?
Are you saying Daniel Sams being one of your elite players is top talent?
Daniel Sams was a platinum pick, right? So yeah, I believe in terms of competition, it was great. It made for some spectacular viewing because a lot of those games went right down to the wire. Lots of thrillers, lots of nail biters. But in terms of quality, I feel like the PSL has definitely dropped off when it comes to acquiring, you know, foreign talent because it's bookended by the IPL, which is the big, you know, cash cow and every player wants to kind of play the IPL. The PSL was like a launch pad for players to play the IPL. You have the likes of Tim David, Harry Brook. Who else can I think of right now? Players.
Yeah, I mean, there have been heaps that have kind of gone there and changed their careers and stuff. It was really important. It was one of the leagues that, because it was so not similar to the IPL, but a major Asian league, it allowed the IPL owners to have a look at overseas players and be like, well, okay, you know, we know that they're not just dominating in Australia and South Africa. These players can really play. And it does feel now a little bit like it's a local league, which we've seen with the Big Bash as well. And you know, even the 100 is a little bit like that at the moment. So it is different.
It was a feeder league of sorts to the IPL. And they did provide Luke Wood to the Mumbai Indians this year. But you see less of that now because you didn't have a Harry Brook or Tim David or even a Phil Salt for that matter. But on one end, you have the IPL. And on the other hand, you have four leagues running in tandem, the Bangladesh Premier League, the Big Bash League. And the worrisome ones are SA20 because you've got Indian money in it. So that's obviously going to attract top talent. And the ILT20 has all of the best stars in the world.
The same talent.
Yeah, basically. So now you've got those four leagues and the IPL and the PSL sandwiched in between. And I get how Pakistan or the PCB would want a designated window for the PSL when there's no other franchise T20 cricket happening at that time. Mm. But a lot of these players want to rest at that time so that they can play the IPL because they're earning bucket loads in either SA20 or ILT20 and then bucket loads at the IPL. And the PSL has been compromised. So moving forward, I believe the PSL, to get back to that level of best league after the IPL, will have to maybe change their window a bit. Also, Jared, it doesn't help that these foreign players have to remain in hotels all the time. That's not a puller, right? Other places they can go and have fun. In the PSL, they don't even get to experience Pakistan. They get to experience the hotels, and that's that. Maybe some golf, and you got to cap it over there. So I believe that they need to look into these things, fix these things, and the PSL is still a big puller in terms of viewership because Pakistan is huge, right? Lots of people love this league. And as a brand, maybe the PSL doesn't even rely on foreign talent anymore because it's just become so big in Pakistan. But for the quality of the league to get better in the future, you'd have to maybe move the window around, maybe have it later in the year, right?
So that when you're not clashing. When could you have it though? It's really tricky because you can't have it in October, right? Because that's going to run into ICC events. November might also run into ICC. So you can maybe have it early November to mid-December, which I do think is kind of open at the moment.
Yeah.
But there isn't many other times in the year when it works. Like you're up against all the other tournaments for the rest of the year.
You can't have it in the summer because that's not feasible in Pakistan. I would have to say October, November, December, somewhere in there, squeeze out a month and have more double headers if that means squeezing it out in the month, right? They did it this time. It was a bit of an overkill in terms of covering it. I was burnt out. But I feel like they still have a solid brand to build on. It's kind of dropped off maybe this year in terms of quality and foreign talent. But the competition itself is lit. People love to watch it. And, you know, it has built a bit of a fan following over the years. I know a lot of people who are not Pakistani and enjoy the PSL on my Twitter, right? So they can still kind of salvage this situation if they maybe move the window and, you know, allow a bit more luxury to foreign players, you know, have them tour the cities, even if it means disrupting traffic, because they're going to be more keen to come to Pakistan. It's not easy. It's bubble life, but it's not bubble life, right? That's what it is. But yeah, that's where sense. I see the PSL.
No, you know, I understand that. Thank you very much for coming on. It sounds weird saying that to you, but I'm going to say it anyway. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Yeah, pleasure's all mine.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make any content, Minbo Pro is the tool for you. Take your long format content and cut it and slice it for social media. This AI-inspired weapon will turn your one piece of work into so many clips. Try Minbo.pro now.